Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
When I was 22 and I got engaged, I'm like, all right, like I'm responsible for my wife and being a provider and all this. And I was 24 when we got married and I just got released by the Oakland A's. So my life was completely in shambles because I'm like, I might not be making it to the big leagues and being a millionaire like I thought. And I don't really have a backup plan. And we're broke.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. On today's episode, we've got on another brilliant guest. He is an entrepreneur. He is a real estate hustler, and he's big in the social media game as well. This man does many things, and this is the one and only Ryan Pineda. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, dude.
No doubt, man. Yeah. Well, thank you for having me, because we're actually recording this in your studio. I was in the hot seat a moment ago, but now we've turned the tables. And so, Ryan, for people who are not familiar with you and what you do, please give the people an intro.
Yeah, give the couple a minute version. But yeah, born and raised here in Vegas, where we're at today. And, you know, growing up, all I wanted to do was play baseball. And so I was fortunate enough to get drafted by the Oakland A's when I was 21 years old and ended up playing in the minor leagues for almost 8 seasons. And, you know, in that time, I soon realized minor leaguers don't get paid any money. So I was making, you know, $6,000-$7,000 a year playing minor league baseball. So I was forced into entrepreneurship. I had to hustle in the off season to essentially just make money to pay bills and then go try and live out my dream. And so that's exactly what I did. You know, I got my real estate license in 2010. That was the same year I got drafted. And that was the toughest real estate market ever because it was right after the recession. Prices were at just all-time lows. No one had money. Everyone was fearful. You know, the average house price here in Vegas was $100,000.
Oh, wow.
It was crazy. And I couldn't even sell them because people were so scared to buy a house for $100,000. So I actually ended up quitting real estate after a couple of years because I hated it. I was like, man, dude, this real estate thing sucks. I don't know why anyone would do this. Well, you know, fast forward, I ended up getting married when I was 24. So a couple of years later. And I got to provide now because my wife is in school to be a teacher. So she ain't going to make any money. And I just started doing hustles, dude. Like I'd always been a hustler. I would sell Pokemon cards. I would sell cell phones. And, you know, I interestingly enough, when we got married, I bought all of our furniture for our apartment on Craigslist. And so with all this furniture, you know, I was looking at it one day and I was like, man, you know, I just bought all this stuff for $1,000. I bet I could flip it and make some money. But I can't flip our furniture. Like, we need it. Yeah. So I was like, what if I just buy a couch? I wonder if that would make money. And so I bought a couch and I ended up flipping it for $200. I was like, wow, I made $200 today. That's way more than like a normal job. It only took me a couple hours of work. I got paid like, I don't know, $50 an hour. So sure enough, that sparked like my first successful business. I ended up getting a storage unit. I bought more couches and this couch flipping hustle was born.
So you were buying secondhand couches?
Yeah, okay. Just off Craigslist. So I'd buy them on Craigslist and relist them on Craigslist same day.
Oh, wow.
You know, I'd clean up the sheets or the covers. I would just take off the covers, throw them in the washer, put them back on, and resell it for usually $200 profit. So I grew that business to making about $8,000 a month net. And I was like, wow, this is crazy that nobody does this. Now, remember back then, there's no like TikTok and no YouTube. People aren't showing you how to do all these side hustles and stuff. It was just an idea. And sure enough, after about a year of doing it, I started to just kind of like, I was thankful it was successful, but I just felt like I was called for more. I was like, I'm not going to flip couches the rest of my life. So, you know, that led me back down the path of real estate. And, you know, I won't go into the story too deep, but, you know, I felt like God was calling me to go back into real estate, even though I had failed, you know, previously years before, but this time into house flipping. And so I ended up getting a hard money loan, which is a super high interest loan, to buy my first house flip. I ended up maxing out my credit cards for $50,000 between me and my wife to go get a down payment for this first deal. And I was like, we're all in. This is either going to work or, you know, we're going bankrupt at 25 and, you know, like, you know, bankruptcy from what I hear is only lasts a couple of years and we'll be fine. So I went for it and sure enough, it worked out. And we made $25,000 on that first deal. And I was like,
here in Vegas?
That's here in Vegas. Okay. That was back in 2015. And I was like, wow, that was crazy. And so that one deal led to two, led to five, led to 20. By year three, I'd flipped 50 houses that year. And I was still playing baseball, by the way, while I was doing all this. So now I'm like the rich minor leaguer because I'm making, you know, hundreds of thousands a year flipping houses and everyone else is making, you know, $1,200 a month. So, you know, in 2017, I ended up retiring and going full time into real estate. So, you know, 2018, I ended up flipping 150 houses.
Wow.
And
when you talk about flipping houses here, I've got lots of my audience is in the U.S., but I have quite an international audience. And I'd imagine a lot of people are confused by what you even mean when you say flipping houses.
Yeah.
So can you just talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. I mean, house flipping could mean a number of things, like you said, right? The way I was flipping back then was I was literally getting the money, buying the house, fixing it up, selling it on the market, and making a profit. Mm-hmm. I was doing everything, like a true house flip. So, you know, I had to raise a lot of money. I had to get a lot of contractors to fix these things up. I had to build up an army of salespeople and marketing people to find all these deals. And, you know, it was a legit business. And that was how I, you know, became a millionaire and built my wealth initially. Then I started to buy some rentals from, you know, I would just cherry pick deals that we liked and that was good. Right. Well, 2019 happens. You know, my son's born, so I become a dad and, you know, he has a very tough birth. He was in the NICU for 2 months. He has special needs and it was just a really rough year in 2019.
Our podcast today is sponsored by the Exit and Build Land Summit. I've been speaking out about the Great Reset for several years, and many people are especially concerned about so-called smart cities being pushed by the World Economic Forum. They're designed to watch everything you do, harvest your data, and regulate every part of your life. I'm an urban dweller myself, but I'm not interested in going through another lockdown, eating bugs, or living in a pod. No thanks. That's why friend of the show John Bush created the Exit and Build Land Summit back in 2021. It's helped tens of thousands of people around the world to exit cities and suburbs and build a better, freer life in the country. It's one of the largest gatherings of top homesteaders, permaculturists, and community builders in America. This year's summit will feature J.P. Sears, Joel Salatin, David Holmgren, and dozens of other world-class speakers. If you want to learn how to move to the country, raise healthy food and animals on a homestead, or create or join an intentional community, then you should check it out. The event is live May 17th to 19th, so sign up with a free pass, a virtual pass, or attend in person in Bastrop, Texas for an unforgettable experience. Go to exitandbuildlandsummit.com to sign up today. That's exitandbuildlandsummit.com.
Trying to just deal with that and manage a big business and all this stuff. It ended with him actually having to have brain surgery at the end of the year. And that drastically shaped my worldview of what was actually important. Because at that point, I remember praying right before that surgery. Like, I didn't know if he was going to live or not because he had a brain bleed. And I was like, God, you could take all the money, the businesses, everything. Just make sure my son's okay. And even during that year in 2019, my wife was like having to deal with being a first-time mom to, you know, a son who had a lot of needs. And so I started working less to support her too and like to be a good husband and a strong leader. And I didn't realize how much that was going to shape my business philosophy and identity after that. It was just a response to what was happening. Yeah. And anyways, you know, we get through that first year of being parents in 2019, and 2020 happens. And so now, you know, COVID happens and all this crap. And, you know, we feel like we're like, finally, we just got on the other side. And then COVID happens in February, March, and I literally have 50 house flips. And so everybody at that time was saying, dude, you know, the economy's about to tank. Like, you can't even go inside another person's house. Like, how are they going to sell? Yeah. And I'm like, dang, dude, like, we might lose it all. This should be a great year. You know, like, I just got through a really tough year emotionally. But, you know, now I might lose my business. Who knows? So, you know, I'm just watching the news and all this stuff. And I never watched the news previously. I'd never gave a crap. But I'm like, I got to know what's going to happen. And I start noticing people just always on YouTube and this TikTok thing and everything else. I didn't have a YouTube channel. I didn't have a TikTok. I had maybe like 5,000-10,000 followers on Instagram just because I was somewhat known as a house flipper. And I was like, I just had a lot of signs again from God. And I had people telling me, dude, you should make a YouTube channel. You should do this. Like, you know a lot more than all these other guys. Yeah. I'm like, give me the guys who freaking you guys watch. So they show me all these guys who are now my friends. And I'm looking at them. I'm like, so what do they do? Like, do they just flip a bunch of homes? They like, yeah, I mean, he owns like 6 properties. Like, he'll, you know, he'll buy like a house a year. And I'm like, that's who you get your advice from? Really? Like, who else? Like, no, but he's great.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my gosh. Okay. So I wasn't mad or anything. I was just like, that's crazy that that's who you listen to.
Yeah.
He doesn't know anything. And so like that it just blew my mind because I had just flipped hundreds of homes and I'm like, what he's saying isn't even right. So anyways, I was like, whatever. So then it's funny enough. You know, a bunch of them during that time were making YouTube videos about how much they were making as YouTubers.
Yes.
And they were showing their stats and they're like, yeah, I made 200 grand this month, you know, from my YouTube channel. And I made 300 grand. I was like, what? I was like, dude, are you serious? Yeah. He's just filming to a camera. He has no overhead, no risk, nothing. Yeah. I'm over here with tens of millions of dollars in debt, taking all this risk. I got 10 employees and staff. I got to deal with contractors every day and all this bull crap to sell the properties. And you're telling me this guy sits in his room and makes 200 grand a month net doing a video. I could not believe what I was hearing. Yeah. And I was like, dude, I'm not going to even get mad. Like, I looked at it as an opportunity. I was like, no way that that's a thing. And I was like, I got to start making YouTube videos. That's crazy that you can make that much money not even being an expert. And so I went all in. In fact, I bought every course I could find. I hired every consultant I could because I knew. I was like, I've been successful at this point getting coaching and consulting and everything. So I didn't hate on them at all. A lot of people did who were in my position because I was in big real estate masterminds and other things. And they're like, oh yeah, these guys freaking don't know anything. And I'm like, well, hold on. They actually do know something because they're making more money than you with way less risk, way less headache. Everything about their business is better than yours.
Yeah.
So clearly, there's something to learn. And so I just took what I learned from them. And I started to notice TikTok too at this time. And I was like, I don't even like watching social media, but dude, this TikTok thing is like very addicting. And so I went all in. I just started making 2 TikToks a day. I didn't know what I was doing. I was dancing on Okay. I mean, that's what people were doing. I'm like, I guess you dance. Like, I don't know. And so I think I was one of the first entrepreneurs to like start making educational content.
Okay. And this is 2020.
Yeah. Like this is March of 2020. And I'm like, all right, guys. So I'm here at a house we got, and this is what we're doing. Right. So I do that. TikTok blows up. By the end of the year, I had like 400,000 on TikTok. And then my YouTube channel, I just started making a couple of videos a week. Sure enough, it blows up and, you know, I had like 75,000 subscribers. And, you know, my most viral video, even to this day, was the couch flipping story. Cause like one of my videos, I was like, dude, I don't even know what I'm going to talk about today because I wing everything.
Yes.
And I was like, you know, I used to do the couch flipping thing like 5-6 years ago. It was super, like, I think that might help somebody. bro, it went nuts. Dude, people were making TikToks about it. People were doing, because they were in COVID. They were looking for ways to make money.
Yes, of course.
It went nuts. People were creating Facebook groups and masterminds about couch flipping. It was crazy, dude. It was like, they saw me as like the LeBron of couch flipping. Like, I created this industry out of thin air.
Yeah.
And so it was really cool to see. And it developed my reputation as a guy who was like a hustler. Like, yeah, obviously real estate was like the most successful thing I had. But dude, I had done a lot of things at that point. So anyways, social media blows up. Obviously, I realized like, okay, this is going to be a part of what I do now. I start a bunch of other businesses over the years. Some successful, some not so successful.
What were some of those businesses?
During that year, I had a tax firm. And so I started a tax firm in the beginning of 2020. Mm-hmm. So, no revenue. I actually sold that business last year to my partner, and we had built it to a multi-million dollar business.
Okay.
Did really well. I built a real estate brokerage from scratch. We had zero people, and at one point we got 200 agents, So like, wow. I built a lot of different businesses. And
how did you do so many businesses so quickly?
Well, I think that's what made me stood out, because people were like, how the heck are you like making content, flipping all these houses, building one business after the next?
And having a family.
Exactly. So this is how the Wealthy Way ended up coming about. So, I'm starting all these businesses, and, sure enough, I'm just getting better at social media and other things, and I'm trying different things at this point. And as time went on, people started to ask that exact question. They're like, okay, look, we get the money side.
Yeah.
You know how to make money, but how can you manage kids and a marriage and faith and stay in shape? Like, you don't seem stressed. I see you. You don't work weekends. Like, how? How is this possible? I was like, well, no one's ever asked me this, but let me articulate it. And so I went to work and I just started piecing it together. I started writing out like a book. And anytime you're writing out a book, it could become a course and all the stuff. So at the end of 2021, I ended up just filming this course called Wealth Builder Academy. And I was like, at first going to charge for it because we were doing education. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to give it away for free. I think it's going to really help people. Mm. 30,000 people downloaded it the first month. And I was like, holy crap. Like, that's crazy. And so many people were DMing me like, bro, this was the best course I've ever seen. Because I was just going over my ideology of how to achieve this balance, how to live the wealthy way. And, I named it that because most people think that wealth is just making money. But to me, wealth is having abundance in all the areas, faith, relationships, money, your health. Mm-hmm. And so I just said, here's how I do it. Here's how I manage time. Here's how I think about leverage. Here's how I think about my priorities and my habits and my goal setting. Here's how I, create my week so that I can, hit all these different areas of life. So the course did really good. And then eventually I turned that course into a book. The book became a bestseller. It was number one in entrepreneurship for like a month.
Awesome.
And then I rebranded everything under the Wealthy brand. So I rebranded the podcast. All of our education companies are called, Wealthy Investor, Wealthy Creator, Wealthy Business. And, education became a big part of what we do. Now it's an eight-figure business. And, it just is something that just has, it was never part of like my plan. I never wanted to be a guru or a podcaster or a guy throwing all these events. We have 1,000+ person event every quarter called WealthCon. So like, it was never part of the plan, but it just, one thing kept leading to another, and I kept wanting to get good at whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, if I want a podcast, how can we make like a great set and get great guests and have great quality and all these things? Hey, if we're going to throw an event, how do we make it an event that's unlike other events? How do we get the best speakers, but also have great parties and networking and the right amount of content, not where it's overwhelming, but not where, they're wanting more, finding that balance. And so I've always just kind of tried to pursue excellence in everything we do. And then, I just ended up with a bunch of businesses, a bunch of real estate. At this point I've probably flipped 600 or so homes. We started doing funds and everything. We've got over 600 units. Like I said, the education company does really well. The media, we've gotten over 1 billion views on Amazing. Social media, and I don't know where it's going to take it. And then, now, I've got my nonprofit for, spreading the gospel. And so, we got this big thing going on with Wealthy Kingdom where We're launching Bible studies nationwide. We've got 50 going on right now.
Okay.
We got another 100 that are coming. So like, there's a lot of things I'm doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fascinating and it's genuinely inspiring. So I want to say firstly, congratulations.
Thank you.
It's awesome. Like it's inspiring. I love seeing people just firing on all cylinders of life and leading by example and just showing people what is possible.
Mm-hmm.
I always say, I just think everybody underestimates themselves.
Yeah.
I think whether you're a low achiever, a high achiever, whatever sector, whatever area, most people, everybody can do more than they think that they can. And I think when you see someone who is doing so many different things, hands in so many different pies, in family, in faith, in business, not just one business, but multiple businesses, social media, all of these things. I mean, doing any one of them at a good level is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Each thing is a challenge. And I think most people think, oh, I need to just pick one or two, right? Oh, I can't stay in shape because I have a family.
Right.
Right. Or I can't open a second business because I have one business.
Right.
Or I can't open a business because I have a job, or I can't do this. Like, people put so many restrictions and limitations on what they can do. And it might be the case. Yeah, not everyone can do like every single thing all the time. But with everyone, I'm like, man, you can do more. You can get in the gym for a couple hours a week.
Here's what I believe, though. Like, even in The Wealthy Way, if people read the book, like, the problem is, okay, take having multiple businesses out of it. I do think you should start with one and, sure, and really try to get good at that. But, okay, assuming your business is a priority and you want to, you know, make money and enough to provide, you still have to worry about your family, you have to worry about your faith, and you have to worry about your health,
yeah,
okay? If anything is out of whack, it destroys the other ones. Mm. If your health is toast, I mean, like, clearly your business and your family are going to suffer, yes, right? If your family, if you have problems at home, mm, and you're trying to get your work done, like, dude, it's hard.
Yeah.
You know, you want to know what's the most costly business decision? Getting a divorce. That's going to cost you 50% of whatever you just built.
Yeah.
So like, okay, we know family's important. You better spend time on it. Mm. Even if business is your top priority, which people say, oh no, family first. And it's like, but you look at people's time spent and their energy and their thought process and you're like, well, no, clearly business is number one for you. There's nothing wrong with it. Just understand, don't tell yourself a lie.
Yes.
And say, oh, well, family and God are number one. Mm. Okay, well, how much time did you spend with God this week?
Can you expand on that thought a little bit more? Because I think that's something that people could easily misconstrue.
Yeah, I mean, look, for me, faith, I grew up in the church. I'm Christian.
Yes.
And clearly, I want people to grow in faith because I talk about it a lot on my channel. I didn't launch 50 Bible studies for no reason. Yeah. I don't know anyone else who's done it, period. And so for me, as far as in the marketplace on social media, you know, plenty of churches have launched Bible studies.
Yes.
But nonetheless, I just know for me, like, what has allowed me to be spiritually filled is that every morning I spend an hour with God. So I'll read my Bible, I'll pray, I'll memorize scripture, you know, I'll write down my thoughts and journal, and it takes about an hour. And I've been literally doing that for about the last 7-8 years.
Awesome.
So, okay, you do that every day for 8 years. Like, it's going to start to stack, mm-hmm, compound effect. We go to church every Sunday. Like, that's always been in our family. Non-negotiable. We just go. And then once a week, I have Bible study. Now, that's what inspired my nonprofit, because I've been doing Bible study for the last, once again, 7-8 years. And it's always been second nature to me. We just show up. It's Wednesday, Thursday, whatever day it is. And I meet with other men. They're typically entrepreneurs who are struggling with the same things I'm struggling with.
Yeah.
We all got family problems. We all got business problems. We got faith problems. We got doubts. But, you know, you talk about these things, it helps you grow. Iron sharpens iron. And so, you know, I've been doing all these things for so long, and it's really strengthened my faith. And, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, we've done other things too, like mission trips and stuff. But you guys get the point. Like, there's a very consistent system and process that, hey, you know, I want to make sure I'm spending time with God,
yes,
in this way. And that for sure has helped us make better business decisions, how we treat people, how we, you know, take a risk, because we know that, hey, dude, you know, this world's actually temporary. Like, it's all good. Even if this fails, it's going to be all good.
Yes.
Because I know where I'm going in eternity. Mm. And so, because that's always been a backbone and a foundation, it makes business better. Because that's a foundation, it makes me serve my wife and treat my wife better. Yes. It makes me prioritize my kids better, you know? Even with health. I mean, the Bible talks about your body's a temple. Mm. You know, if you believe in Jesus, you have the Holy Spirit inside of you. I'll tell you what, I want a great place for the Holy Spirit to be, not some, you know, bum body. Yes. Where, like, you're supposed to respect your body, you know, both health-wise, sexually, all those things. And so, like, if you have that as the framework, it makes everything else better. Mm. And so, like, what I ended up seeing as I moved up the ranks in entrepreneurship was that I met some of the biggest entrepreneurs on the planet, billionaires. I met social media rock stars in the entrepreneurial world. And dude, let me tell you, man, most of these guys are still struggling with the same problems that people on this, you know, listening right now struggle with. They're struggling with identity. They're struggling with purpose. They're chasing the next goal or the next dollar, because if they don't, they have to come to grips with themselves and the life. You're seeing divorce happen at such crazy rates in entrepreneurship. You're seeing their health not be that great. And I see it. And I'm just like, guys, like, I mean, here's the answer. Like, you have to have all firing on cylinder, you know, full cylinders to make sure that you get to where you want to get. Because if you only focus on business and this one thing, could you succeed in that one thing? For sure. Will you pay the price later? Absolutely. The price will get paid.
Yeah.
And, you know, the question is, well, what if you focused on all of them from the get-go? And I believe then, like, you won't pay the price later. You'll actually reap the rewards later.
Yeah. I think something that you have really worked out early on in life, which I think most people either take a really long time to work out or never do, is the value of all the different pillars. I think there are so many people out there, majority of people are out there, even majority of successful people, majority of famous people, wealthy people, whatever it is, and they've got some of the pillars totally figured out. They've got the financial thing on lock, and they've got the, I don't know, their social media game on lock. Not that that's even a pillar. Or they've got...
they're jacked.
Yeah, they've got a couple... Yeah, exactly. They've got the health, and they've got the... health and wealth, but then spiritually they're dead.
Yep.
Right? Like, completely just, and they don't even see it due to their own belief system.
Well, they also are completely unaware that that's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause they don't see it. They don't believe in it to see it.
Yeah.
And then they're, you know, people are having, could be substance abuse issues. Or
yeah. Why am I always addiction? Why do I have a marriage problem?
Yeah. And they don't draw any connection with these things. And look, I of course recognize that depending on people's beliefs, there's different ways that people can figure these things out. But it's like, this is a pillar of humanity that's always been there. Regardless of your religious belief or lack thereof, you cannot debate the fact that the religious and faith pillar has been an important pillar for all of humanity and remains to be for the majority of billions of people around the world.
Yeah.
Some of them, it is Christianity, some it's Judaism, some it's Islam, some it's Hinduism, some, but this pillar, this faith, this having something above you, believing in a God, believing in a higher power and a deeper meaning and purpose. You hear a lot of talk, particularly when it comes to young men, about lack of meaning and purpose. You hear a lot of talk about all the problems in the sexual marketplace, dating, marriage, divorce, yeah, this family, should you even reproduce? A lot of these conversations are coming to the fore, especially on podcasts and on social media. And it's fascinating when you listen to it, because again, sometimes I listen to a lot of different people and I know a lot of different people and I listen to all these angles and commentaries. And again, oftentimes it's like, there's this giant piece that's missing. You've got all the studies and the statistics and you've got experts,
exactly,
and you've got evolutionary biologists and psychologists and this and this and lawyers. And it's like, well, what about the faith piece? What about the God piece?
You know what's funny? Yeah. 100% agree. It's like, for you, you're a deeply critical thinker. Mm. And anybody who thinks a lot, you know, has obviously contemplated what happens next, right? And from a logical standpoint, when you really think about it, you're like, okay, I'm going to be dead way longer than I'm alive, right? Like, there's only one certainty in life. You are going to die. It used to be death and taxes, but you're telling me in Dubai that's not even a thing. So, like, yeah, clearly death is the only thing that is guaranteed. And you're like, okay, so that's the only guarantee in life, logically speaking, and I'm going to have to be dead more than I'm, you know, longer than I'm alive. I should probably try to answer that question more than, what should I do next month? You know, like, what's my, you know, calling for today? What's going to make me happy today? It's a short-term mindset. When you actually think in a truly eternal mindset, it shifts your entire decision-making process of how you do things. And it does make you, I guess, not value money as much as people probably do, because you're like, well, yeah, I mean, these material things for sure, like, they're somewhat nice initially, but then they get old. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just start to realize, yeah, and they definitely don't come with you. And what, you know, as you get near the end of your life, you're like, what is going to happen now? And that's why I think people finally start to figure it out later, because they tried all this stuff, especially successful entrepreneurs. Let's just say somebody's in their 40s, 50s, and the millionaire, like, they've done it, but now they've already gone through a divorce. They watched their kids already grow up, and they realized, well, dang, I'm probably not going to ever get that time back. Mm. They're looking at their health, and they're trying to now buy back their health that was neglected during that time. And so it finally comes to grips of, wow, this is actually might not have been worth it.
Mm. Money is a very poor ends. It's a great means to an ends.
Yeah.
But if the goal is just more, higher number in the bank account or investment account, and that's it, not, okay, what are you going to do with that? What are you going to create? Who are you going to help? Then obviously it leads to misery, because you don't need, there's a level where it's, and I don't even think the number's that high, where it's like, okay, there's enough there. I'm more than comfortable. I can generally acquire and have the things that I want and have a good life. And when you see people hit that level, I've spoken about this with some very wealthy people who have friends who are much wealthier than they are, right? They might be worth 50 million and they're friends with someone who's worth 500 million or someone who's worth 5 billion. And it's just like, really, as a human being in this life here on earth, like, man, I'm all for ambition and squeeze all the potential out that you can. But like, if you've got 100 million, is another 100 million.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Just for you as an individual.
Yeah.
What can you get with 200 million that the 100 million wasn't doing?
Well, the only thing you can get is a new rabbit to chase.
Yes.
If you're not fulfilled, exactly. Right? So you think, oh, this will now fulfill me. You know, this money will now, this status, this fame that I'll get from doing that, like, you know, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, once you realize that, and you can only truly realize it until you achieve it. So, like, you know, for people who haven't achieved those types of things, how could you accept that as fact?
Do you know
what?
I don't think you need to get even close to that to understand it. Like, I'm nowhere near that level.
Yeah.
But it's just like, you can already see, even from where I'm at, it's like, okay, buying that first Rolex is nice.
Yeah.
That first sports car. At first, it's like, okay, well, you, all right, bro, you've got 8 now. Like, is the ninth one, right? Is the ninth one going to feel like...
I think the ninth one's going to do it.
Yeah, you know what I mean? When you get people, it's like, cool, I got 30, 40, 50. It's just like, okay.
But you got to remember, like, that's for them. But, like, you know, when you're first starting out, you're like, dude, if I could make 100,000,
for sure,
like, bro, my life would be good.
Yep.
And then you make 100, and you're like, all right, it's not as good as I thought. And now I got bills and inflation, mm-hmm. and maybe I got to fit, like, okay, I really need to make 250.
Yeah.
And so you play this game and you get to 250, and then, you know, your lifestyle increases. And, yeah. You know, like, typically the person who's able to strive and hit a goal like that is very driven, yes. And, you know, they want to get better. And so it's like, it's this weird dynamic where successful people are usually, you know, very driven and, mm-hmm. you know, they're never satisfied. And so they never reach this place of being both content, but also driven.
Yes.
That's the difference. Yeah. And I was content when I was making $1,200 a month. I wasn't rich. I was always content, yeah. because of faith, because of everything else. I was like, dude, I'm a pro baseball player. Like, I may not be making money, but I'm living my dream. And like, I know one day I'm gonna get there. I had faith. Now, I never made it to the big leagues, you know, never got there. I made more money in one real estate deal than 8 years of playing baseball, you know? And so, but that was never the goal. Yeah. Like, would I, you know, in hindsight, not play those 8 years? Absolutely not. I loved it every minute. You know, I had my trials, my adversities. I got released. I had terrible games. I had fans booing me. I had to be away from my wife, you know, while she was in school and I was in season. So like, you know, but that experience developed me into who I am today. And, you know, you learn to be content with little. You'll for sure be content with a lot. And so you were actually talking about it on my podcast where, you know, you get these people who, you know, if you're a coward to begin with, this is what you said. Yeah. If you're a coward and you make a lot of money, but you're still a coward with a lot of money.
You're like, rich coward.
Yeah, nothing changed. You're still a coward. Yeah. And the same is true here, right? Like if you were content and happy and faithful with little, you will be faithful with much.
Exactly.
And like God talks about this in the Bible. Like it's literally in the Bible that if you are a good steward of little, he will entrust you with more. It's a promise. It's not like he might, he will. Mm. And it's the same thing. Like you were also bringing up the fact of, you know, somebody has, you know, 100,000. They're the same as the guy with 1 million. Like they both don't think they have enough, right, for their level. Like it's weird.
Yeah.
I think that's why God gave us tithing. Mm. It was like, okay, 10%. It's equal all the way around. It has no matter. It's the same proportion no matter what you have. Mm-hmm. So I remember, like I said, I grew up in the church and I by no means was perfect, but like I started tithing when I was like 16 years old.
Okay.
And so I remember like making $1,200 and I'm like, I got to give $120. Like this is really difficult.
That's a lot.
Like, I have no money.
Yeah.
And then I remember making $25,000 on that first flip. And I remember thinking, holy crap, $2,500. That's a lot. Like, does the church really need this? This is a lot of money. And like, I had to really decide, like, am I actually a generous person or, you know, am I gonna, you know, not be because all of a sudden I got a lot of money, which, you know, actually in hindsight isn't even a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I did, you know, faithfully after a lot of wrestling with myself, right? And then I remember, you know, the first time I made $1 million and it's like, I gotta give $100,000. Like, not that I gotta, but like, that's what I'm supposed to do.
Yes.
Right. And at that point, to be honest with you, it was easier to do that than it was before that.
Interesting.
Because at that point, you just build up all these habits and everything else. And you're like, oh, yeah, I give. And, you know, people will say, well, yeah, if I had $1 million, dude, I'd give $100,000 too. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Like, no, you wouldn't.
Yeah.
If you can't even give $100 out of your $1,000, there ain't no way you're given $100,000.
Yeah. What do you think is the best thing of having a lot of money? What's the best thing about it?
Options.
Tell me more.
I think that, you know, everyone values different things, right? So money gives you options. You can buy back your time by, you know, hiring people to do tasks for you now. You have the option to go travel. You have the option to buy nice things. You have the option to give, support the things you want to support. You get the option to start a new business. Like you have options. And so you can do what your heart or your character desires. That's the benefit of money. You know, I always say money's just an amplifier. Mm. It only amplifies who you already are. So if you were generous to before, I mean, you're just going to be even more generous with money. You'd be like, dude, I was given everything I had before. Like, this is great. You're not going to all of a sudden flip the switch. Yeah. And you know, it's just, for me, it's options.
Yeah. I think money and power are both amplifiers. I think people think, oh, they change people. I'm like, I think it more brings out what was already in you. If you already had a little bit of a drug problem and then you become a multi-billionaire, you've got a massive drug problem. If you were, you know, a little bit of a philanderer and then you acquire that money and power, you're like a massive one. If you were already kind-hearted and generous, you're going to be super, super generous.
We were talking about Trump on my podcast. It's like, I don't think Trump changed when he became the president. Like, he's always been who he was. I don't think it changed anything.
Yeah. What's the worst part about it?
The worst part?
Or the hardest?
What
do you struggle with most? What's the biggest challenge?
I think lifestyle increase is probably it. Mm-hmm. I would also say that when going gets tough, like, you got to go in reverse. So, like, this last year and a half was really hard. The hardest financial time of my life, because the economy sucked. They doubled interest rates faster than they ever did in the history of, you know, the U.S. anyways. And, you know, that real estate had a bigger hit than probably anything else. Mm-hmm. You know, real estate and interest rates are very correlated. And so, dude, I had, like, you know, 50 house flips going on. And so when that happens so quickly, there's not really anything you can do. You already own the properties. Like, there's nothing you can do. Yeah. And so these properties went down in value. I ended up having to sell many, many of them at losses. Now, I paid back my investors on the deals. They made their money and their interest. I had to personally write checks out of my own pocket to close them. And so I lost millions on just deals that went south. And, you know, in hindsight, you're like, could have, you know, it have been avoided? Could we did anything different? And it's like, not really. I mean, who's going to predict they double rates quicker than ever in history in the matter of months?
Yeah.
Like, real estate's so slow moving. There's nothing you can, like, there's really nothing I could have did. So anyways, you know, it was a very difficult time in that stretch in real estate. You know, I had to deal with that. I had to deal with, you know, whenever the economy's tough, like, when things are rolling, everybody's happy. Yeah. Right. And then when things are not rolling, now people's quote unquote true colors start to come out. Mm. And so you got to make tough decisions. You got to get rid of people. You might have to shut businesses down. You might have to lay people off. Like, there's lots of things that have to happen during that time. And I had never really had to experience that. You know, I didn't have to go through 2008. And so, you know, this wasn't even nearly anything close to 08, but nothing was. You know, this was probably a typical recession.
Yeah.
And that was a good learning experience. So I would say, like, probably the worst part of money, to your question, is, like, when you get accustomed to making so much and then you got to
go backwards
for a little bit and deal with that.
Yeah.
And realize, like, oh yeah, I probably did get a little bit of an overinflated lifestyle. Like, I don't probably need this watch or this car. like, yeah. 'Cause I was never materialistic to begin with. And then you just, like, huh, I have a lot of crap that I never really cared about before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever find a challenge balancing, you've talked a little bit about the synergy between your Christian faith and your business and family and these other things that are important. Are there any times where you feel that they come into conflict, or there's a challenge or a decision that's hard to make in balancing the two?
So this is really important what you're bringing up, and people don't really have this. There needs to be an objective guiding force in your life. Because if everything is subjective, subjectively means things are always changing and it's not truth. It's just what I believe, what I think.
Your truth.
Your truth. As we talked about, I'm like, your truth with everything has been getting really skewed the last 10 years. Yeah. But if you have an objective source of truth that you believe, then you no longer have to wonder what to make a decision on. It's just, this is how we make decisions. And this is super important in a marriage, because if you both, let's just say you both come from different religions, it gets really difficult. I honestly don't know how people do it. Mm. I really have no idea how two people with different religions could possibly be married for a long period of time if they had strong faith in their religions. I just don't see how it's possible, because you would both believe you're not going to the same place later on. Mm-hmm. The way you make decisions would be so different in how you raise your kids and how you guys operate. Like, I just don't see how it's possible. Now, there are plenty of people who have, you know, lukewarm faith, or they're born into a religion and it's more of a cultural thing than it is
their parents' religion.
Yeah, like, that happens all the time, yeah. Right? But, you know, for me, my wife and I got married young, and I met her when she was 18. I was 22, and we ended up getting married right when she turned 21.
Yeah.
And, you know, we always told ourselves, we went to pre-marriage counseling. We always told ourselves, like, you know, hey, you know, God is always going to be the center of what we do. In any kind of disagreement, we will always fall back on what the Bible says about this issue.
Okay.
It's not going to be, well, I feel this way, and I feel that our feelings are fine. Mm-hmm. As long as, you know, what we're feeling is in alignment with what the Bible is saying. because that's what we know to be true. Feelings aren't true.
Yeah.
Right. And so a lot of times whenever we've had conflict, it was always because one of us was getting away from that. Right. It's like, well, yeah, actually you're right, babe. Like I am being really selfish right now. Like I am actually like pursuing the love of money in this scenario when in fact I need to get back on track and get back in alignment. Yeah. And then there are other times where, yeah, it's like, hey, you know, the Bible says, hey, I should be serving my husband. I should be submitting to my husband. And, you know, she's not. And then she realized, okay, we got to come back. And like this word submission, people get all out of place about it. Right.
Yeah.
And we understood that when she was 19 years old, that that was something. Now here's the thing. People don't actually even understand what submission means. Submission, if you just look at the word, means to come underneath, sub, and support a mission. And so for me, obviously my mission is, as time has gone on, it keeps getting bigger and bigger. And I can promise you, my wife has been there to support me through it and amplify everything. You know, that's the way it's gone. And it's been a great relationship. And it's very clear, you know, but it would be one thing if, once again, it's tough. Like if she was like, hey, I got my own mission and thing I want to do. And like, you know, you go do your own thing and we'll each run our own businesses. And then we'll like, whatever, it might be for somebody, but biblically speaking, we're supposed to come together on everything we do. So anyways, when we got married, we definitely didn't know it would lead to what it's led to, but that's what's always brought us back into alignment. And as we both have changed, I mean, dude, I'm a way different person. You know, we just celebrated 10 years like a few months ago.
Congrats.
Thank you. Like, I'm way different today than I was 10 years ago. I was a broke baseball player who knew nothing. We had no kids. Once you have three kids and you've been married 10 years and you deal with all the things that I've dealt with, you're like, yep, I see life a little bit differently now than I did when I was 22. And she does too. And so here's the hard part, right? A lot of the reasons why divorce happens is because you slowly drift away.
Yes.
It's not all of a sudden she just developed some weird ideology, right? It was because at some point we got off track and we never recentered. Mm. Like nobody ever stays perfect. It's, oh crap, we're getting off track.
Yeah.
Let's come back. Let's come back.
Yes.
And so you need some kind of an objective source of truth, because at that point, if you don't, then everything is subjective. And at that point, if I believe that, hey, this is what's actually real and this is what I'm supposed to do, and you believe something that whatever, then yeah, you're going to, like, who's to say either is incorrect? Mm-hmm. How do you define that? You can't.
Man, you've dropped a lot of gems there. There are a lot of gems. A lot of young men listen to this podcast, and I'm also listening intently as well. As a non-married man, but a man who will be married and will be a father, certainly, in the future. There's a lot to learn. I love listening to people tell these stories, and I know that people who are listening to it, especially given the current discourse around dating and marriage and all the struggles between male-female dynamics, and there's a lot of clashes and confusion going on, perhaps more than at any other time and place in human history. Maybe we have been through this before, but I think that this is a unique version, especially with the technology that we have now and just where everything is economically, socially, culturally, politically, all these different ideologies. It's no longer as simple as, okay, the vast majority of the people in the country are really operating off of the same moral foundations and values and standards. You were talking about coming back to that same standard.
Mm-hmm.
For most of history in the West, it was like, okay, there's this thing called the Bible.
And let's follow it.
95% of us believe in it.
Yeah.
And we're all in alignment. You know, not everyone is adhering as well as each other, but we can always come back to this thing. Whereas now,
we agree that this is good.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Whereas now, there's still a lot of that. But it's increasingly like, oh no, that's just made up, or that's just a social construct, or there's this other ideology, or you know what, I'm just going to make up completely my own version of it. And people keep doing this, and I keep seeing it exploding in people's faces, and they...
This is my truth.
Yeah, and people never come back to this baseline of like, maybe the answer is already there. Maybe this was worked out a few thousand years ago. and we've forgotten it. It's kind of fascinating. I've been reading through the I'm reading through the Bible front to back.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny reading through the Old Testament because they keep just going through these cycles of rebellion and coming back and rebellion and coming. I forgot like how many times
they just make the same mistake
like,
every time.
It's just like, what is up with these people? You say, okay, this king comes into power and boom, let's like put back up the Asherah poles and start worshiping Baal and all these other things. And then and
what's crazy about it all is that, you know, it's like you said, it's happened since the beginning and Adam and Eve did, they're walking with God. Like literally Moses is leading the Israelites out. Like they just parted the Red Sea. You're like, dude, okay, obviously God's real. Yeah. Like this is crazy. And God's with them the whole time. And they're like, oh man, Moses was gone for a few days, like up at this mountain. Like we'll just make a calf. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if God actually was real. Yeah. And the same thing happened with Jesus.
They're
it's like,
make us slaves again in Egypt. Take us
we would rather be slaves than this. Cause we don't know. At least as slaves, we knew our life would suck and we knew how it would end. And that's the exact reason why people struggle with faith or taking a risk, because they would rather know what the outcome is. Like they fear the unknown, even though they don't realize their outcome is destruction. Their outcome sucks, whether it's after they die or whether it's in their current predicament of, bro, you work this job and like, there's nothing that this is it. You know, you're complaining about, man, I need more money or I need more time. And like, well, if you stay at this job, this is your slave. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. And so unless you decide to go take a risk, which requires faith because you don't know how it's going to go, you know, that's the thing. But like, even like I said, with Jesus, he's with the disciples for 3 years, just literally performing miracle after miracle after miracle. And then he's like, I will die and I will come back. And then he dies and they're like, oh, dude. That was a fart. Like, I'm out. And they run and they deny him and all this stuff. And then he comes back and they're like, oh, yeah. Yeah. I forgot. He said he was going to do that. And then you still have unbelief. And Thomas is like, well, I know you guys all saw him and stuff, but until I see him, I don't believe. And it just makes sense. It's like, dude, if God was in front of them and they still struggled to believe, that makes complete sense why we still do the same things.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. As I'm reading through the Old Testament, and now, again, maybe just due to where we currently are in the world, I find comedic aspects to it. Mm. Just because of how much it resonates, again, I'm just like, people have not freaking changed. Mm-mm. I'm just, there's the part, is it in Judges or is it in Kings where... people are demand, you know, they don't have a king.
Yep.
Right. They don't have a king and they're demanding, no, we can't just have a heavenly king. Yep. We need an earthly king, you know, give us a human being, whatever. And then they want he's tall and he's handsome. So we want the tall guy.
Yeah. Samuel's like, you don't want a king, guys. And Sam, and they're like, no, we do want a king. Yeah. He's like, I don't think you do. Yeah. Cause you're going to end up oppressed. And all that, you're going to be taxed.
Yep, yeah.
Like all these things are going to happen if you want a king. Yeah. Like you have God, you don't need a king.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'll give you a king, whatever. Take this guy Saul and he's going to destroy your lives.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting just how much human nature doesn't change. I'm curious to talk a little bit more about family.
Okay.
So how did you, I know you met your wife, you said you were
22. She's 18, yeah.
Okay, how did you guys meet?
Once again, this was a God thing too. You know, and this is, people are like, okay, this guy's like a Bible thumping dude. You don't realize things are God things until you just look back with hindsight and you're like, wow, that was crazy, you know, that happened. But like even with my wife, you know, I got drafted. I went to Cal State Northridge in LA for baseball, went there for 3 years, got drafted and came back to Vegas as a because, you know, I'm going to live here in the off season. And I had one semester left of college if I wanted to graduate, and the Oakland A's were going to pay for it. So I'm like, well, I might as well just go finish, whatever. But I don't want to go live in LA. I want to live in Vegas. So maybe they'll let me, you know, take some classes at UNLV and transfer over to my college. So long story short, I get it approved. And I'm like, great, I'm going back to school. So I go back to school at 22. And I needed one elective credit. I had five classes and one elective. And I'm like, okay, what's the easiest elective I can do? And I see this rock climbing class and I'm like, oh, tight. I'll freaking climb rocks. That's easy. And about a week before school started, they're like, hey, not enough people signed up for rock climbing. So you need a new class. And I'm like, crap. Well, all the good electives are taken. What am I supposed to do? So I look on the website and there's like literally only a couple left. And then I see one and it's canoeing. And I'm like, okay, what's this about? And they're like, well, you canoe 3 days on to the Hoover Dam. We camp out, we canoe, we just have a good time, and you get 3 credits. Yeah. And I was like, okay, sign me up for that. That sounds good. So I sign up for it, and there's like 8 of us. And sure enough, my wife is one of the people. And, well, my soon-to-be wife. And I'm like, okay, this canoeing trip's going to be, this should be pretty fun. And so I'm like, this is going to be great. And, you know, we do the canoeing trip. You know, at first, you know, I'm flirting with her and stuff, and she's not feeling it. And because I'm like kind of like playing with her too much. And, you know, long story short, she denies me at first on, I asked her out for her birthday.
Okay.
And I was like, hey, you want to, you know, go get lunch or something for your birthday? And she's like, nah. And I was like, huh, that wasn't what I expected. Okay. I'm not used to this. That was weird. I thought we were vibing. Yeah. Well, long story short, she came crawling back and like, I don't even know. It might've been like 2 days later.
Okay.
She's like, hey, she messaged, this is Facebook.
Okay.
She's like, hey, you know, if you still want to go, I'd do it.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, let's do it. So then we go to Olive Garden. So that was our first date and it was good. And then, you know, a month later we were dating.
You hear this, ladies. I've seen, I keep seeing these takes on social media about like, I don't even know Olive Garden. I'm from England, but I keep seeing random takes on social media about like, yeah, if he wants to take you to Olive Garden, he's not the one, girl. He wants to take you to Cheesecake Factory. Like, he's not the one.
Dude, so I listen. Yeah, bro, I loved Olive Garden. So yeah, we went to Olive Garden. It was great. Had a great time. And then, you know, long story short, we end up getting engaged like after a year. We get married a year later, and we'd have got married and everything sooner, but I kept leaving for baseball. So, the funny thing is with that story is obviously it's like weird canoeing, but later on we were talking about it during a, at some point I was like, you know, what's funny? We would have never met. And she goes, why? I was like, because I signed up for a rock climbing class and I got canceled a week before and I was forced to end up in canoeing. And she goes, no way. And I was like, yeah. She goes, no, I signed up for a rock climbing class too. And they emailed me a week before and they said there wasn't enough people. And so I had to sign up for the canoeing class. And I was like, there you go. Like, we were probably the only two that signed up for the rock climbing class.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You tell me. Like,
that's amazing, man.
Yeah.
And how's it been? You are now a father of three?
Yep.
Amazing. You became a father first in, did you say 2020?
2019. So 2019? Yeah, they're all five and under.
Oh, wow. Okay. How has that changed your life?
I mean, dude, like kids drastically change your priorities. You know, like when you get married, because you're not like you're going to see when you get married, you're like, all right, this is different. Like I have responsibility now. Now, I mean, you're like older now, so it's a little different because you're established and you got this going on. But when I was 22 and I got engaged, I'm like, all right, like I'm responsible for my wife and being a provider and all this. And I was 24 when we got married. And I just got released by the Oakland A's. So my life was completely in shambles because I'm like, huh, I might not be making it to the big leagues and being a millionaire like I thought. And I don't really have a backup plan. And we're broke.
Yeah.
So what am I even able to do? I literally had no idea. And I already failed at real estate at that point. So I failed at real estate as a realtor. I got released from the thing I had worked my entire life for after 3 years. And now I'm married and I have to provide for my wife. And so you think about this at 24, like all the thoughts that are going through your head. And the only reason we could even afford an apartment and I could like even buy the furniture is because of wedding gifts.
Okay. Yeah.
We got like $4,000 in wedding gifts. And so, you know, I was forced into like maturing really quickly. Whereas now today, you know, society is like most people are like, yeah, let's wait to get married and we'll wait to our 30s. Mm-hmm. And I was forced to basically become a man early.
Yeah.
And, you know, we did that and we told ourselves like, hey, you know, let's enjoy life married for like 5 years and you just enjoy the married life and all that. And we did it very differently. Like we didn't move in until we were married. Like, you know, it's very different. Like, I've had all these alpha guys on the podcast, yep. and so my journey is so different than their journey.
Sure. I think it's good for people to hear this.
Yeah, and you know, we spent 5 years like just enjoying each other, and it was great. And we were broke for the first couple. Well, I wouldn't say we were broke, but we were broke when we started, and then I started flipping couches. Like, oh, we're kind of rich. Yeah. I thought we were rich, and then you know, house flipping starts to happen and take up, and sure enough, by the time we're 5 years in. You know, we're millionaires. And I'm like, okay, I think we're, well, 4 years in, we're like, well, I think we need to start trying to have kids if we want to hit that 5 year thing. Cause you got to try early. And we both weren't ready because life was good, but we felt like, yeah, we're probably never going to be ready. Like you're never truly ready. Mm-hmm. And so we start trying and then, you know, she gets pregnant pretty quickly and, you know, we have our son. And I already told you the story with that. Like that was extremely difficult the first year. And that was like, man, we thought we were going to have a big family, but man, this is like way hard.
Yeah.
And it all goes back to perspective because that was our first child. So we didn't know if this is normal, what's not. But now that I've had two others since, you're like, whoa, that was not normal. And okay. So, you know, we have him and then a couple of years later, we have my daughter and, you know, my daughter's like 1,000 times easier.
Yeah.
She's just a normal kid.
Yeah.
And I was like, we didn't know until we had proper perspective. We're like, wow, that was okay. We can have another. So we have another. And funny story, Judah, he's my youngest. He's now 5 months. Because we had so many issues at the hospital, like my son was 2 months premature, spent two months in the NICU. My daughter was a month premature. And thankfully she didn't have to stay in the NICU, but you know, it was a tough experience. And when she was born during COVID. Okay. So that rubbed us the wrong way too with everything that was happening. Yeah. So then for this third one, my wife was like, I want to do a home birth. Mm. And I was like, I don't even know what that is. Like I literally had never heard of it. And I was like, she's like, go watch YouTube. I was like, all right. So I start watching and I'm like, we're going to have the kid at the house. Like, okay, whatever. So, you know, the only thing was she had to make it long enough, you know, in the birth or not the birth, but like the carrying whatever, right? Because all our kids are premature. Mm. So after we made it past like the cut date, we're like, all right, great, we're doing the home birth. And then like 3 days later, she starts getting contractions in the middle of the night. And she's like, I think he's coming. And I'm like, all right. I had not been trained at all. They're like, here's this tub, this freaking water thing, and just fill it up. And I'm like, all right, I'll freaking fill it up. So I wake up and blow up this. It's basically like a ghetto above ground pool.
Yeah.
And start filling it up and she's like starting to go really quickly. Mm. And she's like, I'm not going to make it. That water's not going to fill up quick enough. And I was like, huh? Okay. Well, no one's here. So Where's the midwife? And what the midwife told us was like around 3 a.m. Around like 2 a.m. she started getting contractions and the midwife, she called the midwife and the midwife's like, yeah. Like go back to sleep. It's all good. Totally. Like I'll be there in the morning and you know, you're not giving birth like right this second. So just go back to sleep. You're good. So I went back to sleep because I was like, all right, well I'll wake up and this is going to go down. And I've been through this. Well, she wakes me up like, you know, hour or two later and she's like, hey, it's going down.
Oh boy.
And so she calls the midwife. Midwife's like, all right, like I'll start getting ready and head over there. Well, I'm blowing this pool up and filling it up. She's like, no, that's not going to make it in time. And I'm like, well, we got bigger problems than this. Where's the midwife? And she starts filling up the tub with water.
Yeah.
And she's like screaming. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is about to happen. So I call the midwife and I'm like, where are you at? And she goes, I'm about 15 minutes away. And I'm like, okay. And I put her on speaker and she goes, okay, ask your wife, does she feel like the baby's in her butt? That's what she said. And I was like, babe, is the baby, like, do you feel like he's in your butt? And she was like, yes. Okay. And the midwife goes, I'm not going to make it in time.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, holy crap. Okay. And I was like, all right, well, I'm going to have to deliver this baby.
Oh, wow.
So, dude, I just kept her on speakerphone and I was like, all right, babe. Cause like there's my wife is like in and you know, she's got panic and I'm like, all right, I'm going to deliver this baby and it's going to be all good.
Yeah.
All right. And so I'm just looking down there and I look and she's like, I don't think I could push him out. I don't think I can push him out. Like, there's something wrong. And I look down there and I'm like, babe, his head is like, I already see his full head, like the top of his head. I'm like, literally just push as hard as you can. He's coming out like right now. So she just pushes. Dude, you know, when you're born in a hospital, there's no water or anything. Like it just comes out. When you're born in a tub underwater, it was just like, dude, it was like a rocket. He just shot out. I was like, holy crap, is this how kids are supposed to be born? Yeah. Not in the hospital? This is crazy. And so I bring him out. He's still got the umbilical cord. Everything's good. I'm slapping him around. And, dude, I was like, this is insane. Like, I just delivered this baby. Like, and the midwife's on the phone. Yeah. And I was like, he's here. And she's like, I'll be there in like 10 minutes. And I'm just like, okay. And so, yeah, dude, we delivered him and she came and everything was good. But, bro, that was an experience. And, like I said, kids will change you, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a huge story, man. Dude, I feel like we've just peaked. there's so many areas that we could go into, but man, I'd love to have you on the podcast again sometime in the future. I want to be respectful of your time.
Yeah.
Where can people find and follow you online?
Yeah, Ryan Pineda anywhere. You know, we did our podcast, so search Wealthy Way or Ryan Pineda and it'll pop up. And so you can see, you know, our interview together. But yeah, that's the easiest way, dude.
Awesome, man. Dude, Ryan, I appreciate you, man.
Yeah, appreciate you having me on.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.